Welcome to EWTN's Crucial Questions, Catholic Answers. I'm Father Regis Scanlon. I'm a Capuchin Franciscan from the Mid-American Province in Denver, Colorado. And we are considering this time the question, why are so many Catholic marriages ending in divorce today? You know, the divorce rate among Catholics is no different than it is among the rest of society. The problem is it should be. It's over 50%. Huh? So what's wrong with Catholic marriages today? This question might be answered by simply saying many marriages in Catholic Church are ending in divorce because the young engaged couples had very poor preparation for marriage. If you take preparation in a broader sense, what they did with their family and what's going on in society. First of all, too many young couples are having sexual relations before they're married. Some are publicly living together before they are married, and people are quite aware of the situation. The pastor and marriage preparation team often finds this aunt when they ask them for their telephone numbers, and they give them the same telephone number. It's months before the wedding. Secondly, ask a young couple preparing for marriage today in various Catholic parishes. Ask them, what kind of marriage preparation did you receive? Often they will tell you that they went away for a weekend program and were taught a lot about communication. They will tell you that it was team taught, that a married couple told them about their experiences. Or they wrote letters to one another. Often these programs are called engaged encounters of various sorts and types. This is all well and good, but if you ask these same couples, at least some of them, the specific questions about what the Church teaches on the nature of matrimony, they appear confused by your question. They say, well, what do you mean? And that's when I say, I'm confused by their statement. You would think that having been to marriage preparation, they would have no problem if you asked them about the nature of matrimony. What are its goals? What are its essential components? Something's missing in the preparation of couples engaged to be married in the Church today. The sooner we recognize it, the sooner the marriages are going to be better. The sign that something is wrong is not just the high divorce rate among Catholic marriages, but also the high annulment rate. Remember that an annulment means that the marriage was not valid from the very beginning. And if the marriage was not valid to begin with, then something must have been wrong with the procedure that admitted the couple to marriage in the first place. Now, we need to deal with that as a church in America, and we need to deal with it immediately. For it's wrong to continue a revolving door policy. You know, a couple gets married, they get an annulment, they get married again, they get another annulment. I mean, you can't go on playing this kind of a game. Surely we must adjust our marriage program and our marriage preparation. So what should be changed? Have longer weekends, 2 weekends? More communication? Perhaps they've communicated enough, maybe too much. What needs to be done here? First of all, if the couple is living together, they must understand that this is the poorest preparation for the holy sacrament of matrimony. It is true that often the couple is ignorant of the Church's doctrine on human sexuality. They must be gently but firmly led to understand that what they are doing is wrong. They must be asked to separate in preparation for the marriage. The pastor and the team assisting the pastor must agree that they should take the couple where they are at and patiently lead them to a correct life in preparation for the holy sacrament of matrimony. It's nothing worse than if somebody comes up with the idea that they shouldn't separate, that they should remain living together. It can happen, however, that even after patient counseling with a couple may not be willing to separate. They might say, we can't afford two places to live. Money's more important than morality, and that tells you something right there. But they still want to get married in the church. If the decision of the pastor is to marry the couple, then the marriage should take place privately in the parish house or sacristy, with just the witnesses present. Why do this? Well, the purpose for doing this privately is to protect what we call the sign of the sacrament. For when a couple who are already living together publicly has a big church wedding with a bride wearing a long white flowing gown with many bridesmaids and guests, and people are all aware that they were living together, they invite all their friends who are probably living together, what happens is that the meaning of the sacrament of matrimony in this situation among the faithful is destroyed. The symbol, the sign of the meaning of sacrament of matrimony is destroyed. People no longer think that marriage is the beginning of sexual relations. What happens is people begin to think that a Catholic marriage is the solemnizing or the blessing of sexual relations already begun. Then everyone in the parish begins to approach marriage in this way because it's easier. We have to ask ourselves, is this what's happened? Hasn't the sign, the sacrament of matrimony, fallen apart because we are marrying many couples that are publicly living together and we're marrying them publicly? We have to ask about the marriage instructions. Anytime you have a problem in something, whether it's marriage or anywhere else, you have to say that there's something wrong, something going on, over 50% divorces, all kind of annulments, and we better look at the very beginning. So what about the marriage instructions? It's no secret that there is much dissent among Catholics today over the church's teaching on human sexuality, even among priests. It's also clear that few people, including priests, like to deal with this subject directly with young couples preparing for matrimony. It's uncomfortable. Consequently, while many marriage preparation courses include information about family planning, this is often included as if it were an option. But many couples will tell you that there is no direct discussion about the evil of contraception and about the effect this will have upon their marriage and their marriage vows. No doubt this is why few couples receive a heart-to-heart discussion with a pastor or pre-Cana team about the essential elements of the marriage vows. And I would say it's very important, and I don't think this is happening, but I think it's very important that the pastor, if he's the one who's responsible to God for their souls, the pastor should meet with every young couple that's coming into his parish to get married and talk to them about the chastity of marriage and about contraception and abortion. He should deal with those things directly himself. That's his responsibility before Almighty God. And if he wants to build a good parish, strong Catholics, he's got to build good marriages from the young. And to do this, he has to give them good instructions. So he should be there personally to do this job. But where this is not possible, then one would hope that one would have a good deacon, good religious sisters or brothers or lay people to carry on, to teach these young couples the most important doctrines of the church in this regard to love and life. The canon law of the church states this. It says, quote, "The matrimonial covenant by which a man and a woman establish between themselves a partnership of the whole life is by its nature ordered toward the good of the spouses and the procreation and education of the offspring. This is Canon 1055, paragraph 1. Similarly, the code of canon law says this, quote, "The essential properties of marriage are unity and indissolubility, which in Christian marriage obtain a special firmness in virtue of the sacrament." That's Canon 1056. So there are three essential elements of marriage, of the marriage covenant, which every couple should know when entering marriage. First, they must understand that the marriage bond lasts until death of one or both of the spouses. This may seem obvious, but further questions can expose a weak grasp of this element of the marriage covenant. For example, I was giving a preparation for marriage to seven couples, and I said to them, I says, "Do you understand that marriage is until death do you part?" And they all nodded their heads, "Yes, Father, we all understand." I said, "Good." I says, "Do you understand that this means that if your partner abandons you, that you are not going to abandon him or her, that you're going to still remain faithful by not dating and not marrying?" They said, "We did not understand that." There's a difference. And we must point this difference out. We must bring it up to them. After pausing for a while, the party said that they would marry. Three decided not to get married because they didn't intend that. But I told the couple that if one or the other of them planned to marry, if one or both partners planned to marry with the intention that I will remain with my partner as long as they remain with me, but if they leave me, then I'm going to marry somebody else. If they have that in mind, then all the rights in the world, and even the Holy Father himself blessing them, would not make that marriage a valid marriage. They would be walking out unmarried. There would be an annulment granted if they can prove it. Now, the promise to remain faithful to your partner, as long as your partner remains faithful to you, this is, one doesn't need to take a vow for that. You don't take a vow to say, "I'll remain faithful to you as long as you remain faithful to me." Who needs a vow for that? You're going to do that anyway. What we need a vow is when our partner fails and we're going to remain faithful. "I'll remain faithful to you even if you do not remain faithful to me. If you abandon me, I'll remain faithful before Almighty God. And the Lord and I will be true to the covenant and we'll pray for your return." That's Catholic marriage. That's what it's all about. And I might add, one of the reasons that matrimony is such a great act of love is because one partner places his or her entire future into the hands of the other. It is a total commitment, not a conditional commitment, a total commitment. That's precisely why marriage is so beautiful. You're really going way out in the limb for your partner. But because the limb is the church's sacrament, it's a strong limb which will never break if we remain faithful to Christ and to his church. So this needs to be pointed out to the young couples when they come in the marriage preparation. That question, all throughout the United States, in fact, it should be in all over the world, should be pointed out to the young people. Do you understand, I would say to these young people and every couple, do you understand that you are promising to remain faithful to your partner even if they should leave you? Do you understand that you're promising that you will never date anyone if your partner leaves you? Do you understand this? And then if they say, "Yes, Father," then you've got a couple that's got a valid marriage. Then you've got a couple who will grow in marital love. At least you've got one of the parts of the three promises that you can start with. Now, there's a second element, though. That's one. There's a second element. The second element is fidelity. While this, too, may seem obvious, one must remember that the promise is not to have a romantic relationship with anyone or to date anyone, even if your partner divorces you. Okay? And we are assuming that there will be no annulment. People think that because a civil judge grants a divorce, they are free to date. This is false. What God has joined, men must not divide, Matthew 19, verse 6. Jesus says this. So the minute the person begins to date a divorced person, or if they are divorced and with no annulment, the minute they begin to date, they are committing adultery. One can't say that I'm going to date and just not have sexual relations. Once you begin the date, the romantic relationship, then you've committed adultery. That's two elements, huh? Perpetuity means it has to, until death do you part. Fidelity is the third they must understand. And by the way, this fidelity means that they're not going to have a romantic relationship with anyone. And they need to understand that if they go to these dances and things like this with other men or women, they're not to have a romantic relationship. They're not just giving up sexual relations with all other women and men. They're giving up a romantic relationship with all other men or women except their partner. That needs to be pointed out clearly to the young couple. But there is also a third element, and it's probably the most important one. The third element needs to be given more attention than the first two. This third element is the good of children. When a couple marries validly, they promise to give their partner the right to the use of the act of sexual relations for the sake of children. Now, this is not just a promise to give a partner a child. I mean, how can you promise you're going to give them a child? You don't even know if you're fertile. Nor is it a promise just to give your partner the right to have sexual relations for the sake of the child during the first 3 years of your marriage or the last 10 years of your marriage. It's not a promise. It's not a promise to give your partner the right to sexual relation for a period of your marriage, whether it be at the first 3 years, the middle 3 years, or the last 10 years when you can't conceive. There's no way to draw the line here. The line cannot be drawn. The promise that you give, when you give your partner, and that's essentially one of the elements of matrimony, the promise you must give to your partner is a perpetual promise. From that day forward of your married life, you will be open to your partner. You will offer to your partner anytime they reasonably request. You will cooperate with them and give them acts which are apt for the procreation of children, acts which will bring about a child. In other words, you promise to have sexual relation with your partner when any time they reasonably request it, and that means non-contraceptive relations. This promise is perpetual. It is a giving of the right to have sexual relations for the sake of children whenever your partner reasonably requests, for the entire duration of the marriage. It is true that a couple should discuss this matter and that they can even plan the birth of children. But after they make their plans known to each other, each must be prepared to cooperate with their partner if their partner changes his or her mind and wants to have more children. A partner may not insist, "You promised me that you only wanted to have two children," something like that. And if on the wedding day they do plan to refuse their partner during their married life, even temporarily, the marriage is invalid. This point must be emphasized today because of the massive dissent among Catholics over the Church's teaching on contraception. To be silent on this point in marriage preparation, in the face of the knowledge of the massive dissent in our society, is totally irresponsible for any pastor. for any marriage preparation team. For even though a priest may, and we must remember that even though a priest may tell those preparing for marriage that contraception is a sin, and even a sacrilege if they have a mass and receive Holy Communion like that on their wedding day, when they're planning contraception, some women may still be persuaded secretly to use the pill. And women who are instructed to use the pill by groups like Planned Parenthood are told that when they quit using the pill, they should wait at least 3 months before conceiving, or they will have a greater chance of conceiving a deformed child. Consequently, a future bride who uses the pill could very well think that there are 3 months down the road of our marriage when my husband has no right to ask me to have sexual relations for the sake of children. This marriage would not only be sinful, it would be invalid. It would be invalid. One couple who were married for 3 years came to me because they were having trouble in their marriage. After 3 years, the woman wanted to have a child, but the husband refused to cooperate. During the discussion, the husband, and I was present during the discussion, the husband said to his wife, "Don't you remember we agreed we wouldn't have children until I got my degree in college, from college?" Later, the couple ended with a divorce, and the woman came to me for some help. I told her to inquire about an annulment, since I believe that her husband had at least partially excluded the intention to cooperate for the sake of children and their wedding promises. So she sent in the necessary papers, filled them out, sent them in, and then I got a questionnaire. And they asked me about what did I hear? What did he say? I filled out the entire questionnaire, sent it in. The church quickly granted the annulment because he had said in my presence that he intended at the time of the wedding to exclude a portion of their marriage from the right, the intention of children, first few years. Oh, he intended to give her children later on, but not during the first few years. This is a very important thing. I want to really emphasize this today. If we look over those things which I just mentioned, the perpetuity, marriage is until death do we part, fidelity, and then the good of children, we must tell couples very clearly that they are promising to remain faithful to their partner even if their partner leaves them. They promise they won't date, they promise they will remain faithful. Two, they must be told that they cannot have no romantic relationship with anybody else. That they are making a promise to have a romantic relationship only with their partner, and that they will not even date anyone if their partner leaves them, unless they would get an annulment. Three, they must promise to give their partner the right to acts, non-contraceptive acts, whenever their partner reasonably requests for the duration of their marriage. And they must intend this at the beginning. And they must be told that if they intend to block that any time during their marriage, if they intend on their wedding day to take out a couple years or 3 months, and they say to their partner, "There's 3 months down the road because I'm on the pill, and I might, when I get off the pill, I might conceive and have a child who's deformed. I've got a better chance. Therefore, there's 3 months where you do not have that right to ask me for sexual relations for a child." If a woman is thinking this on her wedding day, and if she's went to Planned Parenthood and is on the pill, there's a good chance she is, then that marriage is invalid because she says there's 3 months down the road where he has no right to ask me for a child. But we must point this out to these young people, or we're very irresponsible today. if pastors do, if pastors teach these young people these beautiful teachings of the church, they teach them on chastity, they teach them the essentials of marriage, if they take a personal involvement themselves with a young couple, lead them to the sacraments, help them to prepare their marriage through holiness, through devotion to Our Lady, and through chastity and love and the Holy Mass, they're going to have preparing wonderful marriages, and their churches will grow. We thank you for being here as we considered why there's so many divorces in the church today. We ask you to be with us next time, and we will consider the question, is it necessary or important for priests and nuns to be attracted to the opposite sex? So we'll see you then. God bless you.